23. Colonel Fedmon Cassad had stepped through a portal, expecting strangeness. Instead, he found the choreographed insanity of war. Moneta had preceded him. The Shrike had escorted him, finger blades sunk into Cassad's upper arm. When Cassad finished his step through the tingling energy curtain, Moneta was waiting and the Shrike was gone. Cassad knew at once where they were, the view from atop the low mountain into which Sad King Billy had commanded his effigy carved almost 2 centuries earlier. The flat area atop the peak was empty, except for the debris of an anti-space missile defense battery which still smoldered. From the glaze of the granite and the still bubbling molten metal, Cassad guessed that the battery had been lanced from orbit. Moneta walked to the edge of the cliff, 50 meters above Sad King Billy's massive brow, and Cassad joined her there. The view of the river valley, the city, and the spaceport heights 10 kilometers to the west told the story. Hyperion's capital was burning. The old part of the city, Jacktown, was a miniature firestorm, and there were 100 lesser fires dotting the suburbs and lining the highway to the airport like well-tended signal fires. Even the Hooghly River was burning as an oil fire spread beneath antiquated docks and warehouses. Cassad could see the spire of an ancient church rising above the flames. He looked for Cicero's, but the bar was hidden by smoke and flames upriver. The hills and valley were a mass of movement, as if an anthill had been kicked apart by giant boots. Cassad could see the highways, clogged with a river of humanity and moving more slowly than the real river as tens of thousands fled the fighting. The flash of solid artillery and energy weapons stretched to the horizon and lighted low clouds above. Every few minutes a flying machine, military skimmer or dropship, would rise from the smoke near the spaceport or from the wooded hills to the north and south. The air would fill with stabs of coherent light from above and below, and the vehicle would fall, trailing a plume of black smoke and orange flames. Hovercraft flitted across the river like water bugs, dodging between the burning wreckage of boats, barges, and other hovercraft. Cassad noticed that the single highway bridge was down, with even its concrete and stone abutments burning. Combat lasers and hellwhip beams lashed through the smoke. Anti-personnel missiles were visible as white specks traveling faster than the eye could follow, leaving trails of rippling, superheated air in their wakes. As he and Moneta watched, an explosion near the spaceport mushroomed a cloud of flame into the air. Not nuclear, he thought. No. The skin suit covering his eyes acted like a vastly improved force visor, and Cassad used the ability to zoom in on a hill 5 kilometers to the northwest across the river. Force marines loped toward the summit, some already dropping and using their shaped excavation charges to dig foxholes. Their suits were activated, the camouflage polymers perfect, their heat signatures minimal. But Cassad had no difficulty seeing them. He could make out faces if he wished. Tactical command and tight beam channels whispered in his ears. He recognized the excited chatter and inadvertent obscenities which had been the hallmark of combat for too many human generations to count. Thousands of troops had dispersed from the spaceport and their staging areas and were digging in around a circle with its circumference 20 clicks from the city. Its spokes carefully planned fields of fire and total destruction vectors.
They're expecting an invasion, communicated Cassad,
feeling the effort as something more than sub-vocalization, something less than telepathy. Moneta raised a quick silver arm to point toward the sky. It was a high overcast, at least 2,000 meters, and it was a shock when it was penetrated first by one blunt craft, then a dozen more, and within seconds, 100 descending objects. Most were concealed by camouflage polymers and background-coated containment fields. But again, Cassad had no difficulty making them out. Under the polymers, the gunmetal gray skins had faint markings in the subtle calligraphy he recognized as Ouster. Some of the larger craft were obviously dropships, their blue plasma tails visible enough. but the rest descended slowly under the rippling air of suspension fields, and Kassad noted the lumpy size and shape of ouster invasion canisters, some undoubtedly carrying supplies and artillery, many undoubtedly empty, decoys for the ground defenses. An instant later, the cloud ceiling was broken again as several thousand free-falling specks fell like hail. Ouster infantry dropping past canisters and dropships, waiting until the last possible second to deploy their suspension fields and parafoils. Whoever the force commander was, he had discipline over both himself and his men. Ground batteries and the thousands of Marines deployed around the city ignored the easy targets of the dropships and canisters, then waited for the paratroops' arresting devices to deploy, some at little better than treetop height. At that instant, the air filled with thousands of shimmers and smoke trails as lasers flickered through the smoke and missiles exploded. At first glance, the damage done was devastating, more than enough to deter any attack. But a quick scan told Kassad that at least 40% of the ousters had landed, adequate numbers for the first wave of any planetary attack. A cluster of five parafoilists swung toward the mountain where he and Moneta stood. Beams from the foothills tumbled two of them in flames. One corkscrewed down in a panic descent to avoid further lancing, and the final two caught a breeze from the east, sending them spiraling into the forest below. All of Kassad's senses were engaged now. He smelled the ionized air and cordite and solid propellant. Smoke and the dull acid of plasma explosive made his nostrils flare. Somewhere in the city, sirens wailed while the crack of small arms fire and burning trees came to him on the gentle breeze. Radio and intercepted tight beam channels babbled. Flames lit the valley and laser lances played like searchlights through the clouds. Half a kilometer below them, where the forest faded to the grass of the foothills, squads of hegemony Marines were engaging ouster paratroopers in a hand-to-hand struggle. Screams were audible. Fedmon Kassad watched, with the fascination he had once felt at the Stim-Sim experience of a French cavalry charge at Agincourt.
"This is no simulation?"
"No," replied Moneta.
"Is it happening now?"
The silver apparition at his side cocked its head. "When is now?"
"Contiguous with our meeting in the Valley of the Tombs."
"No."
"The future, then?"
"Yes."
"But the near future?"
"Yes. 5 days from the time you and your friends arrived in the valley." Kassad shook his head in wonder. If Moneta was to be believed, he had traveled forward in time. Her face reflected flames in multiple hues as she swiveled toward him. "Do you wish to participate in the fighting?"
"Fight the ousters."
He folded his arms and watched with new intensity. He had received a preview of the fighting abilities of this strange skin suit. It was quite likely that he could turn the tide of battle single-handedly, most probably destroy the few thousand ouster troops already on the ground.
"No,"
he sent to her.
"Not now. Not at this time."
"The Lord of Pain believes that you are a warrior." Kassad turned to look at her again. He was mildly curious as to why she gave the Shrike such a ponderous title.
"The Lord of Pain can go fuck itself," he sent. "Unless it wants to fight me."
Moneta was still for a long minute. A quicksilver sculpture on a wind-blown peak.
"Would you really fight him?" she sent at last.
"I came to Hyperion to kill it. And you. I will fight whenever either or both of you agree."
"You still believe that I am your enemy?"
Kassad remembered the assault on him at the tombs. Knowing now that it was less a rape than a granting of his own wish, his own sub-vocalized desire to be lovers with this improbable woman once again.
"I don't know what you are."
"At first I was victim, like so many," sent Moneta,
her gaze returning to the valley.
"Then, far in our future, I saw why the Lord of Pain had been forged, had to be forged. and then I became both companion and keeper.
Keeper?
I monitored the time tides, made repairs to the machinery, and saw to it that the Lord of Pain did not awake before his time.
Then you can control it?
Kassad's pulse raced at the thought. No.
Then who or what can control it?
Only he or she who beats it in personal combat.
Who has beaten it?
No one, said Moneta. Either in your future or your past.
Have many tried?
Millions.
And they have all died?
Or worse. Kassad took a breath.
Do you know if I will be allowed to fight it?
You will. Kassad let the breath out.
No one had beaten it.
His future was her past. She had lived there. She had glimpsed the terrible tree of thorns just as he had, seeing familiar faces there, the way he had seen Martin Silenus, struggling, impaled, years before he had met the man. Kassad turned his back on the fighting in the valley below.
Can we go to him now? I challenge him to personal combat.
Moneta looked into his face for a silent moment. Kassad could see his own quicksilver visage reflected in hers. Without answering, she turned, touched the air, and brought the portal into existence. Kassad stepped forward and went through first.